Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Addiction, What Everyone Needs to Know, by Suzette Glassner, narrated by Rebecca Gallagher. Foreword. Addiction, What Everyone Needs to Know, is quite simply one of the most engaging, informative, and practical books on addiction that I have ever read. As an addiction researcher for the past 45 years, I have reviewed all kinds of books about addiction. Many were scholarly tomes dedicated to providing researchers with the latest scientific findings. Others were personal chronicles of an individual's or a family's struggles to overcome dependence on alcohol and/or other drugs. The scientific books were, of course, essential. The facts contained in them formed the foundation of what we know. Yet so many of the scientific findings described were simply not available to most of the public. Similarly, the personal accounts of overcoming addiction and achieving recovery were often deeply motivating, but often very personal, and thus not broadly relevant to the large population of those affected. What I have rarely read during my career is a book designed for the very large number of individuals, families, and communities who need accurate, practical information and sensible guidance on basic questions that will inform immediate critical decisions on what to do. Some of the most basic of these questions are, is my child/partner/friend addicted? How can I tell? What does addiction do to the body and brain? What causes the seemingly uncontrollable urges to use? Is marijuana addictive? Why does it seem safe to use? What can I do? Are there any effective medications or therapies that reliably work to treat addiction? Is there life after addiction? What is recovery? And is it attainable/sustainable? I, too, have asked these questions when dealing with addiction in my own family, or when asked for my opinion by friends and colleagues facing the same problems. So many times I thought, if I am supposed to be an expert and I don't have clear answers to these fundamental questions, how can a school teacher or a policeman, or a business executive, make informed decisions that will profoundly affect their futures? I wish I had had Dr. Suzette Glassner's book, Addiction, What Everyone Needs to Know, to help my own decisions and to provide practical guidance for all the families, healthcare providers, and policymakers who asked me for advice over the years. The questions posed earlier are the focus of many of the chapters of her book. The answers provided within those chapters are simultaneously scientifically accurate and also practical and constructively motivational. Dr. Glassner knows the science through her years in addiction research at UCLA, and she has applied the most important and effective parts of that science in her years of clinical practice. She has clearly profited from her experience, blending the clinical science with common sense in a very fluid and engaging writing style. As importantly, Dr. Glassner has provided a realistically optimistic portrayal of the road from addiction to recovery. Unlike so many of the TV and internet advertisements for addiction treatments, Dr. Glassner does not indulge in impossible promises of cure. Just the facts coupled with sound, realistic clinical guidance. The book makes clear something that is so difficult for those in crisis to see, that there are effective medications and therapies available to treat addictions, and that recovery is an attainable, sustainable result of science-based, comprehensive, continuing care. In short, the book conveys realistic hope without minimizing or exaggerating the struggles. So, for all these reasons, I am very grateful to Dr. Glasner for this contribution on both a personal and professional level. Finally, I have a very readable book I can recommend to patients and parents, physicians and clergy, attorneys and judges, teachers and employers who have exactly the same important addiction questions and concerns addressed in this book. Dr. Glasner has masterfully combined her decades of work in research, clinical care, and teaching into an exceptionally clear and direct discussion of the most important questions affecting addicted individuals and their families. A. Thomas McClellan, Ph.D., Emeritus Professor of Psychology and Psychiatry, University of Pennsylvania, and former Deputy Director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy under President Barack Obama. Part 1. What does addiction look like? 1. Introduction. How can this book help you understand addiction? What you will learn from this book: the symptoms, diagnosis, and causes of addiction. How to know when professional help is needed to address addictive behaviors. The effective medical and psychological treatments for addiction. Behavioral techniques that help manage addiction and prevent relapse. How treatments and lifestyle changes can be tailored to a person's unique characteristics, symptoms, and life situation. Alisa, 42, found herself in an emergency room in Southern California with no recollection of how she had gotten there. Her problem started many years earlier when, bored and unsatisfied in her marriage and role as a stay-at-home mother of two school-aged children and feeling isolated from her close family in Boston, she began drinking alcohol just to have fun and be social. She had found some friends, mostly other moms from her children's elementary school, with whom she could go out for drinks and enjoy herself. Over time, she developed a habit of going out to run errands once her kids were settled in and doing their homework after school, and would stop into a local bar by herself to have a few drinks before going home. Tension began building in her marriage when she took hours to come home from running errands in the evenings, at times arriving noticeably intoxicated after having driven herself home. When she and her husband Jay were at social functions where alcohol was being served, Alisa spoke increasingly loudly and somewhat angrily. Not surprisingly, the more often Jay had to try to slip out of parties and gatherings unnoticed with Alisa, the more he dreaded these events. After a while, she began attending them without him. Her problems escalated when she blacked out at a bar one night while on a girls' trip in the desert with a few of her friends. When she woke up in the emergency room, Alisa was told that her friend Beth had brought her in after she lost her balance in the bathroom of the bar and had started vomiting and passing out intermittently. Her friend was worried that if she took her back to their hotel room, she might vomit in her sleep and something bad could happen to her. Alisa's doctor in the emergency room diagnosed her with an alcohol use disorder and provided some referrals to residential treatment programs for addiction where she could be evaluated more thoroughly for alcoholism. In the meantime, he suggested that she try attending an Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting for support and advised her to stop drinking. When Alisa returned home, her husband told her that he had thrown out all the alcohol in the house and that her drinking had to stop. "I made a huge mistake," she said to her husband, "but does that mean that I'm an alcoholic and I can never ever drink again?" "Why would you ever want to drink again, Alisa?" he shouted angrily. "If you don't stop, our marriage will never make it." Even though her drinking had caused her some stress and embarrassment, quitting altogether sounded like the last thing she wanted or needed to do. What do you need to know to help someone with addiction? This book will equip you with factual information about addiction and its treatment, with the assumption that those who are affected, either directly or indirectly by this illness, are better positioned to accept, live with, and cope effectively with it with the relevant knowledge on hand. For someone in Elisa's situation, and for those who love or care about her, some of the important questions to gain understanding and take steps to address the problem are: what are the symptoms of a substance use disorder? Where does social/recreational substance use end and substance use disorder begin? What caused this illness and how long does it last? How does one know when a relapse is imminent? What triggers relapse once a person is in recovery? What can one do to minimize the chances of relapse? Are there different medication and/or therapy treatments for addictions to different types of substances? By the time you've reached the end of this book, you will have answers to these questions, along with a more thorough understanding of addiction and its treatment. Is there hope for recovery from addiction? Substance use disorders affect at least 1 in every 7 American adults. Like Elisa, those who suffer from addiction, which is a severe substance use disorder, experience many difficult problems in their family, social, and work lives. People with addictions to alcohol and drugs are also at high risk for physical health problems, for example, cardiovascular illness, liver disease, and infectious diseases, mental health disorders, for example, depression, anxiety, and psychosis, and suicide. Thankfully, despite the widely held belief that addiction is a lifelong illness from which people don't recover, the scientific data on treatment for alcohol and drug use disorders suggest the opposite. There is hope for recovery. With psychological treatment, and in many cases medications, it is possible to return to a normal life, free from the once devastating consequences of alcohol and drug use. These treatments make it possible not only to reduce and/or eliminate alcohol and drug use from one's life, but to prevent relapses or contain them so that they don't spiral out of control or last for a long period of time. Cope effectively with environmental and psychological triggers, and function well in important life roles at work and home. If you or someone you love is in the throes of an addiction, this may be difficult to imagine, but a wealth of scientific research, coupled with the inspiring true stories of people who have struggled through addiction and its treatment, speaks to the potential for a rewarding life in recovery. Who is this book for? Whether you have already come to recognize that you have an alcohol or drug use disorder, are becoming concerned that you might have one, are worried about a friend or family member who may have or definitely has one, or are considering embarking upon a career in substance use or addiction treatment, this book will help you understand the disorder and learn how it can be treated effectively. In the chapters that follow, you'll find current information on the defining features of alcohol and drug addiction, its causes, its medication and psychological, also known as behavioral, treatments, and the lifestyle changes that can aid both short and long-term recovery. Naturally, these treatment approaches should be adapted to the unique circumstances in an individual's life and work best when they are tailored to each person. In other words, not every scientifically based treatment works for every person with an addiction. In this book, you will learn more about how an individual with addiction can discover the treatment approach that is the right fit to facilitate success in their recovery. In my clinical practice, I have found that the early stages of coming to recognize an alcohol or drug use disorder bring about many questions and anxieties. Those who suffer from addictions and their family members tend to find information about the causes, symptoms, behavioral patterns, and effective treatment options very reassuring. Because the illness of addiction is, by definition, characterized by a loss of control over one's behavior, the way it unfolds in a person's life can be quite unpredictable. This unpredictability can lead a person with addiction and their loved ones in and out of crisis mode as the drug or alcohol use disorder takes hold and leads them to act in ways that are uncharacteristic of the person they once were. For Elisa and Jay, understanding how chronic alcohol use affects the brain and behavior, and how treatment that brings about changes in alcohol use can stabilize the brain's functioning and lead to other positive behavioral changes, could have been quite helpful to inform next steps for Elisa and her family. Without this information, it was challenging for Elisa to understand the rationale for changing her drinking. Why do people return to substance use even after it causes problems? After some self-reflection, Elisa realized that despite her initial reluctance to quit drinking, she shared her husband's concerns about what had happened in the desert. Though she knew it wouldn't be easy, Elisa decided to try to spend the next month alcohol-free. Weeks went by, and to her husband's great relief, Elisa stayed sober. It wasn't until Jay went out of town to a conference that something inside of her began to shift. Her children were at school, and she was feeling bored and a little lonely. "I've been doing so well," she thought. "It's a beautiful day out. It would be nice if I could just go out to lunch at my favorite outdoor restaurant and have a glass of wine with my meal." One drink led to many, and later that night when her husband discovered that she had returned to drinking, the tension at home became palpable once more. Logically, Elisa knew that alcohol was creating problems in her life, and drinking wasn't a good idea. But her body and mind seemed to be telling her otherwise. Elisa's story is not as unusual as it might sound. Because she didn't fully understand the nature of her alcohol use disorder, she was of the mindset that getting sober might be a matter of pure willpower. She didn't realize how progressive the illness of alcoholism is, or why the ER doctor felt that she met criteria for this disorder. She wasn't aware of the warning signs of relapse either, so as she was confronted with them, she walked straight into a trap. Her illness enticed her with the notion of drinking a single glass of wine, which she had intended to be the end of it. Yet, it was just the beginning. Understanding the biological causes of addiction, including the way in which it can affect decision-making, can help to clarify why, despite knowing how destructive alcohol had become to her important relationships and her overall functioning, Elisa continued to feel preoccupied with a desire to drink. No one understands. How do common misconceptions about addiction affect the recovery process for individuals and families? After trying unsuccessfully on her own to stop drinking over several months, Elisa entered outpatient treatment, where she attended one-on-one and group therapy, and learned quite a bit about her alcohol use disorder. An addiction medicine doctor prescribed a medication called naltrexone to help curb alcohol cravings and prevent relapse. Following treatment, Elisa spoke with a few close friends about her diagnosis and treatment. They were supportive, but some of their comments made her feel a little uneasy. One friend doubted her diagnosis. "You just need to learn to control yourself a little better when you drink. You've always been a lightweight." And, "Maybe you're just going through a midlife crisis." This led Elisa to wonder if her husband's response to her crisis in the desert was somewhat exaggerated, and she was just going through a tough time in her life. Elisa's husband seemed to be walking on eggshells around her. Jay's intentions were coming from a caring place, but he seemed to be constantly scrutinizing her for signs that she would drink or had been drinking. When her mood was even slightly unhappy or irritable, he would ask her if she was going to see her doctor soon, and if she thought that the therapy was working. He asked her almost every day if she had taken her medication, and it felt somewhat intrusive. What neither of them fully understood was that rebuilding trust in a marriage or other close relationships is a very normal part of recovery that doesn't resolve itself overnight. And as you'll learn in Chapter 11, sometimes marital or family therapy can help. People who have little experience or knowledge of addiction and its treatment may make many incorrect assumptions about it and may not know to talk about it in ways that are helpful, leading them to say and do things that feel alienating and annoying to a person who is struggling with addiction and initiating a plan of recovery. Many people erroneously view addiction as a reflection of poor choices or a moral failing, leading them to make critical and judgmental comments. They may view a person with addiction as overly fragile because trust has been eroded between the person with addiction and their loved ones. They are likely to question that person about their follow-through with their treatment plans, whether that means attending treatment or self-help groups, taking medicine, or a combination of these things. They will often be quick to jump to conclusions about relapse based on very slight changes in one's mood or behavior. Despite many decades of research that has clearly established addiction as a chronic brain illness with genetic and biological underpinnings, the stigma attached to this disease is far from gone. This is something that a person who suffers from addiction can both defy and accept. While it is worth the effort to share with others one's knowledge about addiction as a chronic illness to promote their compassion and understanding, not everyone who views addiction as a reflection of poor choices will be willing to see a different perspective. Consulting with a health professional with expertise in addiction treatment can be helpful to make these conversations easier. What can recovery look like? Elisa's first year of recovery was quite challenging, but now, 1 year later, her life has changed for the better in many ways. A few months into sobriety, she was diagnosed with depression, and she began taking Celexa, an antidepressant. With the depression symptoms under control, she found that the desire to drink did not come up as frequently or intensely. The boredom and loneliness that used to trigger her appeared to be partly influenced by her low mood and inability to enjoy things, both of which are symptoms of a depressive disorder. She had not realized this and thought that she was just a person without enough sources of joy and pleasure in her life, which was partly why she turned to alcohol. Elisa and Jay have found their way back to a healthy marriage. They began seeing a couples therapist with specialty training in addiction, and after about 3 months of counseling, they felt that things were back on track in their relationship. The therapist helped them learn how to communicate about Elisa's recovery in ways that were constructive and mutually supportive. Jay learned how to check in with Elisa in a non-intrusive way, giving her the space and independence she needed to rebuild her confidence, while respectfully and caringly holding her accountable for the commitments she had made to her continuing recovery. With time, Elisa came to accept that his fears were pretty normal, and that the longer she sustained her sobriety, the more of the old Jay she began to see, relaxed, trusting, and optimistic about their future. Together, they learned about the warning signs of relapse and how to discuss concerns that either of them might have if some of these signs were to come about. Elisa continued to attend individual therapy on a weekly basis, and she gave her therapist full permission to speak to Jay about her treatment if needed. Overall, the key to their marriage surviving Elisa's alcoholism was the mutual agreement they shared to be open about her recovery, coupled with the skills they both acquired in therapy about how to communicate about her alcoholism and recovery without stirring up conflict. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, Elisa is coming to terms with the idea that her alcohol use disorder is a chronic illness, while at the same time realizing that this doesn't mean that it will always be a front and center issue in her life. She has come to recognize that by remaining vigilant about her recovery, she can manage this illness and live a fulfilling life. She is learning that managing it simply means staying consistent with her treatment, prioritizing her health and well-being, both physical and mental, and tuning in to any relapse warning signs that she or her trusted loved ones might notice. With these practices in place, she doesn't need to worry about the alcoholism taking her life over again. Looking forward, how to use this book. This book is divided into four sections. In chapter 2 in this section, What Do Addiction and Recovery Look Like?, you'll learn about the symptoms of a substance use disorder, both from the perspective of the individual who is suffering from it and those who are close to that person. Expanding upon Elisa's story, you'll become familiar with the behaviors that tip off loved ones as an addiction is developing and progressing, and how a person who is living with alcohol or drug addiction may come to recognize what is happening to them and develop a desire or intention to change. In terms of prevention, Chapter 2 also describes how a person who is vulnerable to addiction can become self-aware, notice their own warning signs, and prevent the illness from developing and/or worsening. Chapter 2 also goes into depth about genetic, biological, and environmental risk factors for addiction. This chapter offers answers to the often asked questions about whether addiction is a choice or a reflection of moral weakness, providing detailed explanations of the basis of our scientific understanding of addiction as a brain illness. Part 2, How Do Alcohol and Drugs Affect the Brain and Behavior?, describes the health effects of alcohol and other drugs with addiction potential, including marijuana, stimulants, and opioids, along with tobacco, nicotine, and e-cigarettes. In this section, you'll learn science-based information that clarifies common myths and misconceptions about alcohol and drugs, such as the idea that there are certain types of addictions that people can't recover from, for example, addiction to methamphetamine. Common questions about various substances, for example, is marijuana addictive? Are e-cigarettes and vaping safer than smoking? Are addressed so that you can become more comfortable thinking through and talking about these issues with others, whether you're contemplating your own decisions to use or avoid these substances, or helping to keep others informed when they are thinking about or actively using them. Part 3 contains a wealth of information about various types of psychotherapy approaches, along with a summary of the evidence for their effectiveness in ameliorating different types of addictions. This section also discusses medications for treating addictions to various substances.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?